Go right ahead.
All right, I'd like to call to order the November 1st meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission. I forgot to ask Beth, anybody by phone?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
No one signed up for public comment.
All right. And then as far as absentee member, you guys are up to speed on Tony's decision to resign from the board. So we'll have a situation now where Connie will come on to the board, but onto our commission, but not until next month, because the council has to accept Tony's resignation. Okay. So, and then obviously based on the election, that could make some interesting twists with Connie, but we'll deal with that.
So I make a motion that we excuse Tony from this meeting based on his pending resignation.
Can you add Connie to that motion? She's not here.
All right. And Connie, do we know why Connie's not here?
We don't.
Well, are we going to excuse her?
Yeah. I think we should, given circumstances and history.
Okay, it's his election. Okay. So let me reword that motion. I'd like to motion that we excuse Tony from this meeting due to his pending resignation, and we excuse Connie from this meeting due to her involvement with the election.
Yeah, I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All righty. So I'm sure everybody's had the opportunity of reviewing tonight's agenda, and we do have one change that has already been communicated to each of us by email by Beth, and that's Steve Despondovich's request to table that particular topic and move it to the next meeting.
I make a motion that we table under old business 5.1 until further notice.
And adopt the agenda otherwise?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. And then as far as minutes go, assuming everyone's had the opportunity of reviewing the minutes, any comment?
I motion we accept the minutes as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All righty, so we'll now move into the agenda. So under old business, we have continued discussion on proposed text amendment to 15.36.260. Batteries.
I'll take that. Or at least I'll start off on that.
Okay, thank you.
I believe the commission may want to revisit this text amendment, and I'll offer several comments on why. I've had a difficult time organizing my comments. You'll understand where I'm coming from at the end, but you might have to be patient with me as I get there. It's been hard to kind of figure out how to approach this. The first point I would make is the lexicon. You'll hear me use energy storage systems, ESS. That's what you find when you go online and look at the stuff. It's all labeled as ESS, and certainly batteries are a main component of that, but I'll refer to the entire, technology as energy, as ESS. The next point I would make is that, as I think Commissioner Galbraith started, and as Councilman Hagler mentioned and will pursue, I'm sure, is the question of whether or not ESSs are already regulated somehow, some way, on the state level, on the federal level. I've spent not an overly significant amount of time, but I've tried to research that, and it's one of those topics when you type it in, no matter how you type it in, you go down a dozen different rabbit holes. It's been very difficult to nail that down. I still can't tell you whether or not there's any state regulation or federal regulation per se, but I did find a couple of interesting things that has prompted these comments. The first thing that I found was a 123-page set of regulations for the installation of residential ESS that was promulgated by the National Fire Prevention Association, something like that. You have a blog article from that organization that briefly summarizes those regulations. The regulations themselves, I registered. First of all, you have to register, so you get all their emails, yippee. And then you can access the regulations, but you can't print them, you can't share them, you can't, you can buy the book, which you do. But there's 123 pages of regulations for the installation of residential ESS. So that told me right away that it's a complex and comprehensive topic. To date, we've only addressed the location of a battery. That's all we've done so far. The other thing that I took from that little blog article is that, and it's obvious probably to you all, but I never thought of it until something triggered it, we're dealing with an inherently hazardous substance or an element, electricity or energy, fire hazards, et cetera, et cetera. That made me think of why, of what are, what the town's charge is, so to speak, charge, with respect to zoning, because we're dealing with zoning text amendments, and that is to secure public health, safety, and welfare. So, we're playing around with regulating a narrow element of a potentially hazardous power or technology, whatever you want to call it. And I think we have a responsibility to the public. So the questions that that raised are, do we regulate it or do we leave it alone? If we regulate it, how do we regulate it? If we regulate it, how comprehensive do we want to, shall we regulate it? What role does the county play? I know very little about permits and inspections, but I'm assuming that the county provides electrical inspections, do they? Is that true?
That's correct.
And I don't know what the county's position is on ESS. I went back and tried to search again regulations for residential ESS, and that's where this Palo article comes from that's on your desk. And it doesn't take much of a glance at that. I mean, that's the municipal set of regulations for installing residential ESS, and man, I didn't understand it. That's a very technical document. I don't think we can't handle that technicality, and I don't think it's incumbent upon us to try. I do think that given the nature of the beast, that a permit situation is pretty much called for, because how would we know? You know, to me, the choices are this. Do we regulate it or not? If we don't regulate it, are we, so to speak, responsible for not helping do our bit for public safety? If we do regulate it, since we can't handle that technical stuff that you see in the Palo Alto regulation, how do we fashion that regulation? We can certainly continue, well, I don't know if we can continue with the battery. Given, if you look at Palo Alto, you'll see somewhere, I don't have the page in front of me, they talk about the location of batteries, and it's a lot more detailed than X number of feet off the floor. What is the county's position on residential ESS? If we knew that the New Hanover County was up to speed on this, then the suggested approach would be that we require consumers that want to put this in to get a permit, because otherwise, how do we know it's going in, and how do we know it's going in correctly? And we can't rely on the electricians. They may do it by code, or they may not. And we can't rely on consumers, because I don't think most of them would have the knowledge of this system required to do it correctly. So at the end of the day, I come back to the fact that there may be some public safety concerns with the installation of residential ESS. How do we, and I'm serious about that. If we don't regulate that and somebody puts it in and does it incorrectly and we've got a fire that breaks out and it takes out several properties, what is our role in trying to mitigate against that? At the same time, we're not prepared to get into it like Palo Alto did. An ideal situation, at least from my perspective, would be that if the county was up to speed on these things and they handle our electrical inspections, that we require a consumer wanting to install this residentially to get a permit. I don't know what that permit should contain, and I don't know how that permit is processed, but if the county is up to speed on these things, then get the permit and let the county handle it. But I do think we need to do more. It's my suggestion, subjective, not legal, that we may want to do more than simply address where the battery goes with respect to the setback. As you're dealing with something that I think creates potential fire hazards. If you look through that log, they tell you how you're supposed to do it if you've got smoke detectors in the house. I mean, I think that's that's a nuance, that's one element out of many. And again, if you look at Palo Alto, there's a lot of specific instances of what you can and cannot do. I think we need to be careful about opening that Pandora's box. We can either do nothing, we can try to do everything, or we can find a reasonable ground in the middle that whereby the town discharges its public safety and sets up some regulations. But what those regulations are at this point, not knowing the county's position, I'm not sure. I'm not here to make a recommendation. I'm here just to stir things up.
Have you gotten any indication that the county's even looking at it?
It's not, I'm so unfamiliar, I wouldn't even know who to call. You know, John probably has some contacts that he can call and bring back some information, but I'm not, permits and inspections, despite 36 years of practice, is an area that I've really never gotten into, because it's all handled by the inspector.
Would you assume that there will eventually also be state regulations?
That's just pure speculation on my part. And the one thing I will say about regulations when they exist, this is such a fast-flowing technology that I think the risk of doing regulations today, with those regulations being somewhat obsolete a week later, is also a factor. I'd like to, it'd be ideal if the town could discharge its public safety duties with respect to a hazardous technology without getting too involved at all in discharging that duty. And like I said, when I came up with Palo Alto, I didn't see anything locally, but I didn't take the time to go through the county's land, UDO.
Well, if memory serves me correct, I mean, we basically just required three things. One is manufacturer kind of requirements within the setback, or not encroaching into the setback, and then nothing taller than the minimum height requirement.
Well, again, right? I think if you look at Palo Alto, you'll find that that's not even mentioned, but a whole lot of other things are with respect to the location of the battery. And in particular, I'm trying to position myself to know how to respond to Councilman Hagler when this question comes up.
Have we, John, has anyone taken the time to look at, like, a manual?
Yeah, if you'd let me speak.
Yeah.
Okay. We can't protect people from themselves. Can't do it. There's nowhere else in our ordinance that we've dictated means and methods of installation of something that we literally have nothing, we know nothing about it. So why are we even discussing this? I think it's an absolute waste. First of all, second of all, people are putting these in their garages. What else goes in the garage?
Yeah. Cars.
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 Yeah.
Battery-operated cars. So what's the difference? Once again, why are we discussing this? It is new technology. The code will catch up to it sooner or later. Yes, permits are required. Yes, they're looking at manufacturer's suggested installation techniques, and that's pretty much all there is to it. NFPA has no bearing on one and two family dwellings. And that's really all I have to say about it.
Yeah. I think it was really an aesthetic question is where it all started.
So. Yeah, if I can. I'm not recommending anything. I'm just bringing this to your attention, and so you can determine how you want to handle it.
Yeah, I agree with John. I mean, when I'm looking through the Palo Alto thing, you know, most of the vast majority of this deals with, you know, installing things in closets and garages and stuff like that. There's only one statement that I can see really about outside, which is what we're dealing with. It says outdoors or on the exterior side of an exterior wall located not less than 3 feet from doors and windows directly entering the dwelling unit. I would agree somewhere along the line someone's got to develop something that looks like Palo Alto. I mean, we can't do that. But I think what we can do is, from an aesthetic point of view, make a very simple statement. If you're going to put this on the outside, you got to do it as we've talked about. We might want to add something like in Palo Alto, it's got to be 3 feet from doors and windows, you know, I mean, if you want to do something like that. But I don't think we really have to get very complicated about this.
I don't think we need to get into the technical installation requirements. Because, I mean, I compare it to a gas tank. All right, you got a propane tank.
I think we've done everything that we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do also. Mm-hmm. We don't tell them how to put in the gas tank. They know that they can't install a gas tank closer to 5 feet from the house or by your air conditioning units. There's all kind of rules, and we don't govern that. The installation does. But we do govern things that, well, you can't put the big tanks in your setbacks, except for that exception that we wrote. But so that's the part that I think we need to focus on, which we did in our original wording that says don't interfere with the setback and follow the manufacturer's instructions.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And required only to be at the minimum height.
Right. What we said last time. Mm-hmm.
I agree. I'm all for that. The only thing I'll pose and see how we feel is, do we want to put something like located not less than 3 feet from doors and windows? Since that, I mean, there must be some reason why they put that in there. I mean, it's pretty simple.
But that's what we get into, but we don't know.
I don't know why they said that.
Yeah, but, so we're just kind of guessing that maybe they got it right, and I'm not comfortable with that.
I don't think we should add anything else.
Mm-hmm. So, John, you feel like we should still be moving forward with the wording as it's currently exist?
Yes, sir. Okay. I just don't think we need to get in the legal system, just like we don't get the legal with any other installation.
Okay.
Just let me and my office do what we're supposed to do.
Can I ask a question?
Sir.
When someone makes a change to their electrical service, you don't do the inspection on that county. They need to apply for a permit. Mm-hmm. Is there any general regulation that the county has how extensive a change to an electrical system are you allowed before you have to get a permit to
do it? If you're pooling wire, you have to get a permit.
If you're pulling wire?
Yes. If you're doing, say, a meter-based change-out, that requires a permit.
Okay.
And a lot of that, the meter-based change-out in particular would be obviously triggered by Duke Energy no matter what.
And John, that also requires being a licensed electrician, right, to get that permit?
That's correct.
So
homeowners can get
their own
permits, yes. They can demonstrate a basic knowledge of what they're doing.
So Attorney Eldridge, I mean, I know your concern in being able to address Councilman Hagler's questions as he's going to have them. You know, is it not appropriate for us to just say we are just dealing with more the aesthetic placement of the battery?
I just brought, he asked a question, I scratched the surface, I brought to you what I found, you made the policy decision, I don't have a dog in this fight, I just wanted to make sure you knew the ins and outs so that we could respond adequately to them. And I'd appreciate it if one of you handled that presentation.
Yeah,
and that won't be until January, as I
Yeah, that's fine. And I think, you know, yeah, we acknowledge that there very well could be more regulations coming. We're just really dealing with a restriction from the standpoint of the aesthetic placement of the battery.
And the setback, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that it can't go in the setback.
Please ask me to check into it on that, so I'm sure I'll be answering that question.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right, even better.
Thank you.
All right, so this was continued discussion. We already have a text amendment along with a consistency statement. So, Beth, is there anything more to do on this item?
No, sir. We'll just do it in January. We're just postponing it for the mayor's reception. We're trying to keep our agenda a little bit lighter.
Yep.
That's all. All
right. Moving into the last topic for old business discussion.
This one, sorry. This is a new item, so technically it'd be new business, but I just put it on the wrong spot. I don't think we've discussed it.
It was discussed in our 9-6 meeting. It was discussed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then skipped last month. And
okay,
back.
Then we're good. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So discussions of zones RA1 and RA3, 15.10.040 and 15.20.040.
Okay, so like I said, with some of my other changes that I was making to the code, I noticed this discrepancy that came up. We discussed it briefly in September. I discussed it with John last month, and there have been a few emails back and forth since then. But for three of the zones, there's wording talking about modifications to lot areas required by yards and setbacks. And it kind of deals with non-conforming issues, which are covered elsewhere. So the question was, well, why is it only in these two sections? Do we want to get rid of it completely? Do we want to change it? And now, John, I know you've looked into it, so if you'll take it from here.
Sure. I think Byron's copied on the email, but
yes.
Based on my research, I believe this particular ordinance was written. First of all, these ordinances came into effect in 1973, and I believe this was original from 1973, but this particular ordinance was written particularly to address non-conforming lots, especially the 25-foot lots. There used to be more 25-foot lots than there are now. And so I believe this was written to give them a little leeway and so that they have a little bit more room to build on. And I believe that's what this was all about. And so I did just a quick number count, and there are 13 lots. Well, 13 lots that are less than, you know, the minimum 5,000 square feet in the RA3. There's none in RA1 at all, and there are 17 in RA2. But anyway, moving forward. So what this ordinance does in those zoning set up. Zoning regulations, the setbacks on the sides are 5 feet, period, across the board. In this particular ordinance, it allows lots that are less than the normal width to go to 3-foot setbacks in a worst case scenario. So it just allows them more breathing room since they're a smaller lot. I don't know if we want to keep it in there or not. I don't think it's really hurting anything. But that's the research that I came up with, and available for questions.
These, the lots that you referenced, are they already improved? Do they have structure on them?
Well, most of them do, yes, sir.
Most of them?
Yeah. There's one or two that do not. Maybe four lots. Anyway.
So, John, if we changed it now, those that have structure on them today, they would just still be non-conforming and be able to continue?
It'd still be a non-conforming lot. They can still tear down what they have and build a brand new one as long as it meets existing ordinances and time permitting.
And for the few lots that are not built on right now, do they need this wording, or could they be handled as a non-conformance if they were ever built on?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, no. After I said it out loud, I didn't either.
Yeah, if they've not been built. If they've not been built.
Because it wouldn't be a non-conform. Never mind.
So, John, the one...
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but,
the ones that aren't built on, they are lots, though, that theoretically could be built on?
Absolutely. You can build on any lot in Vero Beach as long as it meets the setbacks.
Well, right now we have the wording in RA1 and RA3. RA1, you said, doesn't have any of these lots.
I want to double check one more time. Okay. Just me jumping up, counting real quick.
Okay.
If you think you're going to pursue leaving it there, then I think we need to amend this ordinance to include RA2.
Right. And possibly change.
That, I would want to just double check.
And we have to look at the wording also, because the wording does differ from RA1 to RA3 slightly. So if we're going to do it, we should pursue this and then put it where it applies.
Yep.
But I have no problem leaving the words in here. I just want to have it in the right place and, applicable to the right zones.
Is there anything about 1 and 3 that would be different than 2? In other words, why would we grant it to 2?
I wonder if it was an accident, because all of that zoning is central to our original town boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one reason I believe that that's why that was put into effect, to address those 25 foot lots, because everywhere else that we annexed over the years had normal sized lots for the most part.
Gotcha. And then none of that situation exists in any other zone?
The only other zone is you might have a random outlier here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it's a random outlier, I mean lot or two. Somehow ended up less than 5,000 square feet.
Yep. And if we didn't make the change for every zone and you had that outlier, if they were to make some type of request using the other zones as precedent, how do you react to that? Do you, is that a text amendment request then for a different zone?
That would be a text amendment or possibly a variance, appeal to the zoning officer.
Mm-hmm.
Then would it hurt to put it in all the zones? Or just to make the statement up front once and not put it in any of the zones?
Mm-hmm. But I mean, is that what residents want? Do they want a property beside them that would only have a 3-foot setback?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's really up to that resident. Whatever that person can legally do on their property.
Well, I understand, but if they can't do it today and now we're going to start allowing it, does that open up another can of worms from a standpoint of...
Well, I think if you actually read the language, I mean, there are certain provisions that has to meet in order to get to that 3-foot. So it's not like, oh, I've got a non-conforming lot, I can build a 3-foot. No. Let's see. You have to be less than 38 feet wide. And at that point, you can reduce your setback by 1/2 foot for each foot the lot is less than 40 feet in width.
Gotcha.
Right, that's the wording for RA3.
Correct.
The wording for RA1 does not even mention the 38 feet.
And this is the one I focused on.
Right. Which makes sense, because RA1 probably doesn't have any.
So is there more study that you want to take on this?
No, sir. I know for a fact that there are lots in RA2 that this could apply to. So I think the question is,
Yeah, I'll admit I'm somewhat torn on this. So, any thoughts?
Let him take another view of the town and see where how many there are.
He's given the count. Consistency? Are we trying to get consistent, or are you trying to allow certain things? I mean, if we're trying to allow certain things, then that's a different issue than just trying to get consistency in language.
Has there been any requests lately from non-buildable lots to build something?
There are no non-buildable lots in town, except for there are some double lots on the ocean front, but they're non-buildable because of flood zones. As far as lots in town, there are no non-buildable lots. Everything you could build something on, it just might be a really small something. But to answer your question, I met with somebody last week that's thinking about putting a swimming pool on their 25-by-100 lot that's right next to their beach house. But we didn't really talk about setbacks at all. But I don't agree with Mr. Gilbert there. It's about consistency, I think, is where we're at. So if we're going to make it good for that zoning,
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of like if we agree that it should be done according to three that has the additional language, right? Then yeah, that would then apply to other applicable zones.
One question, John, are there these small lots, are there multiple, are there any places in town where there are adjacent small lots? In other words, if you have a reduction in the setbacks because of the size of the lot, are you going to be in a position where there's two adjacent small lots where you have a only 6-foot difference between homes?
There are some places like that.
All right, so then that becomes an issue, safety issue. Right, from a fire perspective or any other perspective, trying to get a good impact.
I mean, should we be getting perspective, from fire in particular, around this topic as well? I would think they would probably be surprised to hear that that situation could exist. I don't typically like to pass on things, but I just feel like this is one that we're not ready to deal with, personally. Just opinion.
I mean, hearing John's comments here, now I'm a little more confused than I was previously in terms of how to think about this.
You got to consider too that many of the lots, the majority of the lots, have been developed, and most likely took advantage of this. Right.
Where all these came about, the smaller lots, they're mainly the old army barracks. That's really where all this came about. The army barracks came off of the Air Force base down there. People picked out a plot of land. They put that thing down there. Their neighbor did the same thing. The next thing you know, they laid out the town and they said, "Whoa." we were going for 50-foot wide lots. I guess we're going to have to make these 25 here since they each have a separate residence. And that's really how it all happened. And that's why we have 25-foot lots.
All right. Well, is there more we would like John to do to help us on this?
I can tell you I'm going to do a more accurate count. I'll double-check my figures and double-check RA1.
Okay.
Well, from your experience, John, what would you recommend?
I've always been torn by two things, what's good for the town and what's good for the property owner. What I mean by that is, should we park what we do ensure that each property owner is getting the highest and best use of this property. And so, in that perspective, then I think that a 3-foot setback would make that property more valuable for each one of those property owners. But is that the best thing for the town? I don't know. That's for you guys to decide and town council to decide.
Yeah, understood.
I'm just a little concerned if you end up with, as somebody mentioned, mm-hmm. two of these lots both have with a 3-foot setback, and you end up with 6 feet basically. If the if that's sufficient for the fire department, some of those type of issues.
I will tell you that that is sufficient by the North Carolina Building Code.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, sir.
6 foot is.
3 feet from the property line.
What would be the correct way to get the fire chief's perspective on this?
Oh, I can get him to respond by email. I thought you guys can get a copy of it if you'd like.
Could you do that?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. So, is this an item that we would like to carry forward?
Yeah, I think we need to carry it forward because, and I'll work with you, John, in the next month on the wording, because there's actually three differing wordings right now.
Oh, yeah, I think we definitely need to do some. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe by next month, I don't know, maybe we'll have the wording and you'll have a more accurate count and we'll bring it back.
Okay. Just one thing real quick. I mean, I was city council member in the city of Mission Viejo, and we shrunk lots from 6,000 to 5,000 to 4,000 to 3,000 because the value of that Orange County, California property was so great. And we ended up with what are called zero lot line type of things where you can actually build right up to the lot. Now, the other one had to be 5 feet away, so you ended up with 5 foot type of spaces. So you had zero lot lines right up to the lot, and then the next one could build 5 feet all the way to their particular lot. And as John said, you know, if you take the kind of town's perspective, that didn't look very attractive. You know, it looked like everything was all squished and condensed and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it is an issue when you start to kind of get all that stuff together. And
there's been some pockets lined during that episode of the town's history. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we shrunk it down from 6,000 to 3,000 square foot lots because of the value of those lots.
All right, John, so you'll get the accurate counts or updated counts and then also get fire chief perspective. Okay. And then any other action items that we would like to?
Well, we'll come up with the wording.
And then, I'm sorry. And Member Barlack will work with John on getting the with the wording. Okay. All right. Thank you, John. All right, mm-hmm. Moving on to new business. As we've all been aware, after Member Barlock got the Chapter 15 work done, then he was going to move on starting at Chapter 1 and continue to just go through the more of the grammatical corrections mm-hmm. and inconsistencies, and has now completed 1 through 4.
1 through 4, okay.
And so if you'll take it from there, Joe.
All right, so what I'd like to do is just, other than the grammatical type of changes, I'll go through here and just run down the changes that are more than grammatical, if that's okay with you. So the first document in there is the preface. All right, we actually have a preface in front of our code. And you'll see there's two changes that I made to that. And one was talking about what GS is, the North Carolina General Statutes, as amended. If you look at the definition in our code, that's what it says. General statutes as amended. So I just added the as amended so that it agrees in both places. That's all. In the next paragraph, you see town in parentheses. I was also tasked as I went through this whole document that wherever we talk about town of Curie Beach, call it town and put it as capitalized. So the first place that's seen is in the preface. So there it is for the first time. It's standard throughout. I will not mention it again. All right, going on to Chapter 1, You'll see in the table of contents right up top, the blue and the red, two items are crossed out there from 104060 and 104070. Those had to do with additions and amendments. They were actually, I moved them to 106, which is titled Amendments to the Code. So these two paragraphs concerning amendments were put under the major topic of amendments. Just relocated. No changes, just relocated. Throughout the definitions, I changed them all as our previous definitions. Shall mean, you know, shall mean the standard wording all the way through. 104.020, history notes, where it says appearing in parentheses. None of them appear in parentheses, so I took that out. Little stuff. And here you see the 104.060 and 070 that were moved. They're all redlined here. Where they're added, they're also redlined. Okay. I do need to point out something. I don't know how it happened in the document, but 106.040E. 106.040E. That was the old 104.060, so that should be red. I mean, the wording is correct, but it should be highlighted as red because it was moved from the 104.060. So, Jim, I don't know if you need me to change what I sent you, making it red, or if you'll just make that red.
Would 106.040E need to be red?
Correct. Because that was moved from the other. I'm sorry, 106.040E. Mm-hmm. I got dyslexia there.
I asked you if 106.040E needs to be read.
That is correct. Because it just happens to be the old 104060. All right, so that's red. Moving on, you'll see the F, G, and H. Those are the old 104070 that I said were moved. So they were just moved to this section. Flipping through, those are the only changes to section 1, chapter 1. Going on to chapter 2. I don't really think I had any real changes in here other than if you look at 2.10.110, you don't even have to turn to it, but I made he, she neutrals. So wherever it says he, she, I said shall recite their findings rather than his or hers, trying to keep everything neutral with today's world. And I did that throughout because we don't limit any positions to he's or she's. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. There's some putting things in the proper order down by 2.14, where it went 060, 080, 070. I just switched them around. And that's basically it for chapter 2. Unless anyone has any questions.
No.
No. Just something as I read through this. It looks like you need a strikeout on the he or she on page 31 of 41.
Can you give me a number? Because I have my marked up copy.
That it's amendment of the declaration. What is that? H.
Right. H amendment to the declaration. Yep. Okay.
Strikeout he.
Oh, okay.
It says he, she.
It says they, he, she.
Right.
But the he, she needs to be struck out. You see that, Jim?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Good catch. Chapter 3. No significant changes. The biggest thing is in the definitions, 304040D, Delta. It was just reworded so that I could follow the shall mean wording in the definition. But it says the exact same thing. It's just shuffled around. It looks like a lot of red. But it's just rewording. Any questions on Chapter 3?
Yep.
And the same thing with Chapter 4. I just cross-referenced, put the correct cross-reference.
Okay, good.
So that's it for the preface through Chapter 4. I'm currently working on Chapter 5.
I've got some papers you want to edit, some articles.
I'm working on the formatting and some of the fonts different next to each other. I'm cleaning it up, and we can bring them back next month if you want to do that.
Yeah, and that'll be for the text amendment and consistency
right,
statement.
Review recommendations.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I try to catch all that stuff, Jim. It's hard to.
It saves us a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah. So that's additional legislative hearing stuff. So with council having pushed back the legislative hearing, or us actually agreeing with council to push back, that would mean we've had three different hearings.
In council, I guess they could fix that date for all three in the November meeting, or they could just set this one up for February.
Well, actually, yeah, we won't have anything to present to them in November,
right.
So... It would, yeah, so it won't be until January before that one would get requested for hearing.
Right, January, they'll fix the date for February for this one.
But that's going to be the case for the other two as well, is they're going to push to January.
Well,
actually, they're scheduling the legislative hearing for January. That's what it is.
Right, and they'll act on that time.
That's right.
I think in January it would be the first time they can fix the date for these.
These, right. That's right. Okay.
That means February.
Yep.
Right. So by then, I hopefully have the next batch that maybe we'll be, if we're going to meet in December, to look at, and then we could add that also.
We usually have a discussion before we have
a meeting. You would have a discussion. We would discuss those in December, the next batch, and then it would be January before we would actually have the text amendment.
Okay.
And then present to them after
we'll
that.
Try. See where we go.
Yeah. So... But yeah, bringing up the next meeting. So it looks like at this point the text amendment and consistency statement 4.1 through 4, and then anything more on this old business topic around zones RA1 and RA3 to possibly include RA2, and then that would be it for the agenda. So. Are we open to meeting in December?
It's okay with me.
Yeah, I'm on time.
You good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we'll have our regularly scheduled meeting for December, and those topics would be included. All right. Well, I think that's it.
Make a motion, Major.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thanks, everybody.
I wonder if anybody's ever opposed it.